to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm Al Haskell, I'm your board representative this morning. There are a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Suggest you pay attention under the upcoming events for the concert coming up Friday with Ruth Looney. Take this home with you, look through it. Summer services are generally more informal, although today we're blessed with a very exciting topic and speaker. Invite you at this point to greet each other, say hello. All right, stay in your seats. Come on now, don't get over it. If you're visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. There's a guest ledger in the foyer, so hopefully you sign that so we have a way of staying in touch if you'd like us to. There's a variety of information on the table out there. Please pick and choose, take what you want. Generally, after our services, we'll gather in the main room for a coffee and refreshments and conversation. There's a special corner for the subject of the service conversation should you want to go for that. If you're visiting us with kids today, are we today? Okay. It's our custom for the children to remain in the service until after the offertory, at which point they'll go to their RE classes. The nursery care, if you get little ones, I think we're good.
No RE today, though, right?
Oh, no, we have RE.
Yeah.
Oh, we do. We do. We have a craft. We're making cloth bags, and I will be going out with the children. I'm Helen. Nice to meet you. And we do have different activities for the children. So we do have an organized activity, and you are welcome.
You'll bring them back, though. You're taking them out, but you'll bring the kids. just want some assurances for visitors sometimes. All right, so we always enjoy getting to know our guests, if any members have brought guests, and they'd like to introduce their guests, or if there are people visiting us today that would like to say hello, this would be a great time to do so.
Our daughter Julia is visiting from California.
Welcome back.
My granddaughter Lexi is visiting from Atlanta.
Hi, Lexi. Yes, we usually have about three members in attendance, as you can tell them. So, and if you would like further information about the church, most any member you can speak to, I'm particularly available for you as well in the social hall after the service. If you're my age, you'll know to put phasers on stun. If you're not, just put them in the silence mode during the service. I expect you're going to find this morning's service choices inspiring, stimulating, worthwhile, fulfilling. I'm going with stimulating. Maybe a little heart-wrenching. We'll see. We're pleased to have Elizabeth Lewis with us today. Many of you may have heard from her. She's presented several talks and workshops here at Lake Country UU on subjects such as healing power of art, interruption, life as seen through the eyes of the soul, the how and happiness of soulful aging. Elizabeth is a stress management and life coach, and She recently became an approved teacher of the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training up in Minneapolis, and so we're very glad to have her with us today. One last announcement, sorry you're out of order, and I think we'll go with the theme, which is the next song, I think, relating to me. So I forgot. Food pantry collection is today for Food Pantry Waukesha County. Your loose cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with the amounts for the food pantry and for LCUUC noted on the memo line or check envelope. If you've brought food contributions, please bring them to the social. No, there are baskets out in the foyer. So, Tracy.
Joy and strength, not in the strident call to arms, but in the stretching out our arms to grasp our fellow creatures in the striving for justice and truth. I'll light our chalice now. We'll sing our opening hymn, number 360. Here we have Gavin.
If any choir members want to join me up front?
Thank you.
now is the time for the story for all ages, so children, young and old, large and small, please join us up front. And the Tim family is going to act out the story, What If Nobody Forgave. In a land far away, a wise old man who knew a great deal about people because he traveled from place to place, arrived at a strange village. In this town, all the people were carrying to what seemed to be great bundles on their backs. They couldn't look around very well, and they never looked up because of the heavy burdens they carried. Puzzled, the wise old man finally stopped a young fellow.
My good man, I am a stranger to your land. Fascinated by these large bundles that you carry, but never seem to put down. What is their purpose?
Well, these are our grudges.
My, that's a lot of grudges to have at your age.
Oh, they're not all mine. Most of them were passed down in my family. See that man over there? I have quite a load of grudges against his family. His great-great-grandfather called mine a horse thief. When they both wanted to be elected mayor.
The wise man looked around and shook his head sadly.
You all look so unhappy. Is there no way to get rid of these burdens?
We've forgotten how. You see, at first we were proud of our grudges. Tourists came from miles around. But after a few years, Grudgeville became a dreary place. Nobody came, and we had forgotten how to stop holding our grudges.
If you really want to get rid of those grudges, I think I know 5 magic words that will do the trick.
You do? That would be a miracle. I'll go and have the mayor call all the people of Grudgeville together.
And off he went, as fast as his grudges would let him. The mayor lost no time calling the people to the village square. The mayor and the wise old man stood on the platform where they could see all the hunched over villagers. When the people had quieted down, the mayor said,
"Good people of Grudgeville, a wonderful thing has happened. A very wise stranger has come into our town, and he says that he can tell us the magic words that would rid us of these grudges we have carried for generations. So how many of you would like to be able to straighten up and have your grudges disappear? Look at the world in a whole new way. Listen to the wise words of our visitor, and then do as he tells us to do."
My friends, these are simple words, yet some people find them hard to say. I think you have the courage to say them. The trick is, you must mean what you say. The first 2 words are, "I'm sorry." Can you say them?
I'm sorry.
Great. The other 3 words are, "I forgive you." Can you say that?
I forgive you.
Now say these words to each other.
There was a long pause, then a low grumble from the townspeople. First one person, and then another, said the words. Soon they were all saying them to each other, quietly at first, and then louder. And then, would you believe it? Just like the wise man predicted, the grudges disappeared. What joy there was in the town. There was dancing in the streets that day, and it wasn't long before the mayor changed the name of the town to Joytown. Thank you, boys and girls. You can head back to me.
And now, for the volunteer, for the secretary of the lecture to come up, and we will.
Thank you.
now is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns with each other. The mic will be brought to you by our greeters, and please state your name and your joy or sorrow. Joy to share. 3 weeks ago yesterday, I had my first grandchild, same kid, and the whole family's doing fine.
I'm Robert, and I have joy that for the past 3 weeks, I had a chance to live and study with the Haitian American community in Boston, and also that the UUSC, the Service Committee, is going to be having more trips to Haiti and other countries in Central and South America. If anyone in the congregation is interested in participating in those trips, please get in touch with me.
Hi, this is Tom. I'd like to light a candle of joy to celebrate the wedding of my son Michael and Becky Fandolaro on June 16th.
Hi, I'm Dave, and I'd like to share joy and concern. There's 12 members of our congregation, including 9 teenagers, are headed to New Orleans Friday morning for a week-long service trip. Helping rebuild after the hurricane destruction and that sort of thing. So just keep this group in our thoughts that they have a safe and productive trip.
Hi, I'm Erin, and after a very long time, Bob got a contract, and so a joy is that he got a contract, and the concern is it's a long commute to Fargo, North Dakota.
I just wanted to say that Arlene Ruffliger, who broke her femur in 4 places, bicycling, she's doing wonderful. She's going up 17 stairs to her condo, and she's made a wonderful recovery, and she'd like to thank everyone for their concern. Thank you.
I have a little concern for my 20-year-old and her friends who are struggling to come to terms with the drowning of another friend of theirs.
Angel, I have a big concern. My oldest sister, Dawn, was diagnosed with colon cancer. They caught it early, and there's great hope for her recovery. The whole family is really concerned about it.
I feel like a candle of joy for our family that volunteered to read that story, and if there's any budding thespians out there that would like to read or act out a story for all ages sometime, just see me after the service.
To rise as you are willing and able and join us in our centering hymn, number 323, Break Not the Circle. reading from Thich.com. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become wholly ourselves. Let us be aware of the source of all being, common to us all and all to all living things. Evoking the presence of the great compassion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourselves and all living beings. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other. With humility, with awareness of the existence of life and of the sufferings that are going on around us, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts and our earth. And I am happy to introduce our speaker, Elizabeth Lewis. Her sermon is on unconditional forgiveness.
I'm going to try and see how this goes. I'm so happy to be here and talk about my new latest passion. Next week I'll be teaching two all-day workshops on the How of Happiness, which those of you who took my How of Happiness class know that that thought alone makes me very happy. I sent an email to all my Bruce students asking them which of the 12 happiness-enhancing activities identified by science would what they like to pursue for those 2 days. Well, it turns out my students want to learn about cultivating optimism and savoring life's joys, and they want to learn about nurturing social relationships. Actually, they want to learn about all of the hows of happiness, except for how to forgive. I mean, I was like, come on, here I've just spent 9 months at the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training, learning to become a forgiveness facilitator, and nobody was interested in my new latest subject, my new latest passion. I kind of felt like I was all dressed up with no place to go. So I was telling my husband this bit of news, and he was like, well, I get their point. I'm not surprised. You know, forgiveness has no glamour, and it's not exactly fun. So why would anybody want to ruin a good time by talking about forgiveness? I was like, oh, I have had to forgive him for that one. But I know that there is truth in what he says. Forgiveness can be a messy business. Why would we want to purposefully court potential discomfort and forgive? Why would we want to reopen old wounds, perhaps? And why would we want to let somebody off the hook? I mean, one of the reasons why we don't forgive somebody is we know we're right about something and we're not going to let them off the hook. So why would we do that? We're right and we know we're right. And let's just put that all aside. And anyways, isn't it better, as one of my clients recently said to me when I was trying to talk to her about forgiveness, she said, isn't it just better to, you know, put these things aside? Let's not look at them. Isn't it just better to let sleeping dogs lie? Well, I'm here to say, no, it's not. Not if you want to be truly and deeply happy. Not if you want to ever experience that Dalai Lama-like joy, not if you want to have a true inner peace. Because as long as you hold on to resentments, large or small, you're chained to that person or the past in some way. And you continue to give that resented person, that resented experience, that resented situation power over you. I had a very good example of this happen recently. A friend of mine, we were catching up, and I was telling her that I was studying at the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training. She said, you know, that's kind of interesting, but I have no forgiveness issues. And then she said, though, you know, if I ever saw my brother-in-law again, I would take a baseball bat and beat his face until it was bloody. And then she looked down at her hands, and then she burst into tears. So even when we think we've put something aside because it's unpleasant and we don't want to look at it, our body-mind-spirit connection tells us something different. It says to us, hey, you've got unfinished business, you've got to look at this, And that's still ping-ponging around in your body, mind, and spirit. If you're aware of it or not, it's still there. And there are other reasons to forgive. Some of the latest research says that forgiveness is good for our health. Research shows that the act of forgiveness decreases anxiety, stress, depression, and anger while increasing self-esteem. And forgiveness is also associated with lower blood pressure, a healthy heart, and decreased muscle tension. And who wouldn't want all that, right? Good stuff. As I said, learning to forgive is one of those 12 houses of happiness. Happiness research says that we need to, when we're on a road to happiness, we need to take things out of the realm of the mind and put them into action somehow in order to fulfill our heart's desire or our good intention. And that's what I learned at the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training. There I learned what's called a transformative process. You might even call it a skill set to learn how to accomplish forgiveness. It's called the Eight Steps or Eight Steps to Freedom. And it's a swift and permanent release and action into forgiveness, usually in an hour. Now here's the part that everybody goes, aha, what's the catch? Well, after some prep work is done, of course, we have to chop those carrots before we can make the stew, right? So we got to do that prep work. There's also a Five Steps to Freedom for Self-Forgiveness. And I've been working with some of my clients on this, and it's just been with really wonderful results, so I'm really thrilled about that. What was really surprising to me, though, when I first went up to the Institute was that I had instinctively done my own version of the Eight Steps to Freedom over a course of 12 years or so. It's so nice you can cut to the chase nowadays. In trying to bring forgiveness to the most painful experience of my life, which was my relationship with my mother. When I was going through the Institute training, I kept going, boy, I wish somebody had told me this whole process way back when, so that I could have just stepped through all this with a lot less pain and confusion. So I'm really happy to be sharing with people now this easier way to do things. We don't always have to take the hard road to healing. You know, sometimes we can find a path with somebody's help and make it much easier on ourselves and still have that great same result. So what are the eight steps to freedom? I'm going to take you through them now as I experienced them in terms of forgiving my mother and what the Institute says. What you hear, some of it you might think, well, you know, that really is not forgivable. But I'm here to say that truly everyone and everything can be forgiven, and my life is kind of an example of that. But first things first, what do I mean when I'm talking about forgiveness? What is my definition of it? And what is unconditional forgiveness? At the Forgiveness Institute, we define forgiveness as an attitude of being willing to let go. An attitude of being willing to let go of unrealistic expectations of self and others. It is also a tool, the process by which this release, again, movement is accomplished, and it is the experience of the release itself, the dissolving of a stagnant and painful block inside you, followed by the sense of new open space in your body, mind, and spirit somewhere, and an influx of new vital energy. Earlier, when I related to you the story of my friend and her brother-in-law, what she really revealed to me that day was the existence of this stagnant and painful block inside of her. You might even call it a painful block of energy that hadn't been released yet. Unconditional forgiveness takes us further and can be defined as a profound and transformative experience of completely releasing any expectation that is causing us to suffer, forgiving everyone and everything. It restores our natural state of wholeness and happiness that is independent of what others have done or are currently doing. Put simply, forgiveness is an inner process, something we do for ourselves in the end, a mindful choice, very Thich Nhat Hanh, a mindful choice we make to free ourselves from the past or a present situation in order to access our most authentic selves, our soul selves, if you will, that best version of ourselves, our deeper selves, our higher selves. however you want to put it. It's all the same, really, in the end. This process is based on the understanding that the way other people act or situations evolve or experiences are lived, and whether we like them or not, is, in the end, really a matter of preference. And our disappointment when we label an experience as bad is really just a matter of unmet expectation. This is kind of a very mindful way of viewing forgiveness. You might call it advanced spirituality, if you will, as far as a practice. As a child, I was very familiar with unmet expectation. I grew up in Wauwatosa, the second of five children, the oldest girl. My father was an alcoholic who had many jobs and lost many jobs throughout our childhood. He would have blackouts and not remember things that he had done. My mother had a genius IQ and had graduated high school at age 16 after skipping several grades. She was a pharmacist. She worked as a pharmacist. In terms of my childhood, I would have preferred many things to be different. I would have preferred that I and my siblings would have been permitted to celebrate our birthdays. Birthdays were forbidden because my mother had deemed that we were not grateful enough to have them, so therefore they were forbidden. I would have preferred that voicing a dislike for a certain food not lead to being forced to eat that food until I grew up. I would have preferred not to be slapped across the face or beaten with a belt or spanked, pants pulled down, often in front of extended family with a fly swatter, really stings, by the way, a belt or a strap. I would have preferred that my mother not have stolen drugs from the pharmacy where she worked and had not given me a steady stream of drugs, Valium and penicillin and shots of I have no idea what throughout my childhood. And most of all, after graduating from college on a visit home, I would have preferred not to walk into the living room with my mother and found my father attempting to sexually assault one of my sisters. My mother, upon seeing what was going on, said out loud to the room, "I did not see that," and she turned around and walked out the door. This was for me a matter, just a moment of shattering clarity. What followed was a string of really frightening and devastating events in which I called the police. My father was forced out of the home. My father threatened to kill both me and my sister. And I was disowned, thrown out of the family, and told I was dead to my siblings. I guess it was all my fault that I had called the police. In the end, my sister was forced by my mother to retract her account, recant what she had said, under the threat of also being disowned and thrown out of the house. It's an awful story, isn't it? I know it. Ugh. Full of many seemingly unforgivable things. In the original draft of my life story, the one that played over and over in my head for so many years like a stuck record, I was sure I was broken beyond repair, that I could never be fixed, that I was unlovable, and that I was doomed to be unhappy and alone forever. But the story I came up with is kind of like getting rid of story altogether. But I, in the end, chose a life that is so much better than I could have ever dreamed of. And forgiveness really played a really big part in that story. So how did I forgive this and so much more? And why? Why did I set upon a course of forgiveness? As I said earlier, the how was instinctively employing something similar to those 8 steps to freedom over a 12 to 13 year period. My whys for forgiveness were classic reasons. I was just tired of suffering. And I wanted to improve my health, which had really was precarious due to the stress of my childhood and all the drugs that I had been given. And I really wanted to bring joy into my life, though I had no idea what joy really was. It sounded really kind of good to me. In Mary Hayes Greco's book, Unconditional Forgiveness, she outlines the need to prepare to make a change in your life by enlisting support. It can be a friend, it can be a loved one. In my case, I chose a therapist. This is really kind of necessary if you're doing the 8 steps to forgiveness, and it's a bigger issue. You know, if you've got these little resentments that you let build up, you know, by all means, buy the book and kind of go through the 8 steps, but if you've got major stuff, you need the support of somebody else. And that's why I became a forgiveness facilitator, so that I could show people how it can be done. So I went into therapy and cried for a year, and then I got down to work. I needed that year to really understand and acknowledge the significance of what I had to live through in my childhood and the depth of my despair. I began to understand that I was not responsible for my parents' actions, which was this huge revelation to me. I always took the burdens of my whole family on and carried them around on my back, much like in this story. And although I had been told all my life that I was less than nothing, through therapy I began to realize that my true self tended to look at all things in terms of love and light, and those who've taken my workshops can kind of guess that probably. And because of that natural tendency, forgiveness became a really an imperative part of what I was beginning to look at as my, quote, recovery from my childhood. In the 8 steps to unconditional forgiveness, step 1 is to state your will to make a change. You say it out loud and you say it strong, which I did over and over again in front of my therapist. I started out by saying, I want to let go of my resentment and anger towards my mother, which eventually evolved into the will statement. But making it a will statement is very important. I will let go of resentment and anger towards my mother. Step 2 of the forgiveness process is to release your emotions by expressing your feelings as exactly as they are inside of you. If you think of emotions as energy, and they are, anybody who's into heart math knows this, you could say that I had a lot of stuck energy inside of me, unexpressed fear, anger, anxiety, resentment, sorrow. And voicing those feelings freed me from them. One of my clients recently said, I don't want to go to that part of this whole process because I don't want to have to say these words. But truly, that is what frees you, is getting out what's inside and putting outside of the body. Traditionally, this is a very big part of therapy, and frankly, it felt good to me. I got stuck here for over a year, and because I think really I had never been able to voice my own truth before, and usually was punished for it. So once I started to name my feelings, I couldn't seem to stop myself. There was a lot of cleansing tears involved in this process, kind of like riding ocean waves one at a time until coming home to shore. And I think I was kind of the shore, though I didn't know it at the time. Step 3 to freedom involves letting go of your expectations one by one. I've shared some of those expectations with you. This part, again, took a while, and I didn't get it right the first time in therapy. I got stuck here. In the 8 steps to freedom, this step involves shifting any expectations, large or small, that you might have to a positive preference. But at this point, I could only express my preference in the negative, which was, I wish that you hadn't betrayed me, abused me, and treated me with such hatred. Too negative, but I didn't know that at the time. At this point, I left therapy not realizing that there was more work to be done. 5 more steps complete if you go by the 8 steps. Though my therapist, she did try to tell me this, but from what I could tell, I was happy enough. I seemed as happy as most people. And I didn't realize at this point that there's no ceiling on happiness. I thought, everybody's just kind of going around faking it like I am, so let's just put this all aside, you know. Then in 1994, when I was in my mid-30s, I was quite ill and had to have a hysterectomy, which kind of stirred up old wounds. So during my recovery period, I re-examined once again my life more deeply and found that something was indeed missing. I really longed for joy. I had been doing a lot of spiritual reading. I had been doing some meditation. And there was this thing called joy and peace. And I was like, wow, give me some of that. But I just couldn't figure out what that was and how to get it. When I had a glimpse of it, I couldn't sustain it. And I was like, oh, come on. So I turned again to that issue of forgiving my mother, something I had been working on at this point for about 12, 13 years. I'm so slow with these things sometimes. At this point, too, I did not know that reconciliation did not necessarily have to be a part of forgiveness. My therapist had never told me this. And so I really kind of geared up for, like, taking what I kind of, the equivalent of a really vile taste of medicine that I was going to do for my own good, darn it all. You know, I grew up Catholic, so that old Catholic girl, she started reasserting herself, and I just can't totally get rid of her. There she was again, so I was like, I'm going to do this for that reason. I re-entered therapy and invited my mother to join me for a therapy session. at this point, as I said, we've been estranged for 12 years now. And I was surprised that she said yes and very pleased. But it turned out she came to the therapy session so that she could say in front of an audience of the therapist that she had never loved me. Could never love me because I was bad. Evil from the time I was born, she just knew this, and therefore I was unlovable. And she was completely justified in all that she had done. After my mother left the therapist's office, the therapist said, you know, I usually don't recommend this, but I would say, do not see your mother anymore. I know, I was like, okay, permission. It was another moment of great clarity for me, like one of those aha moments that I felt in a very visceral, physical way, a kind of a relief, a release, a permanent acceptance and letting go, all within moments. And I would have gotten there without seeing my mother, but hearing her words made it so much easier. It was kind of like a door had been opened to a cage and I got to fly out, and it was fabulous. After that, I was able to go back to and reframe my preference in step three of the forgiveness process in the positive and put a true name to my true expectation. It was simple. I wish you had loved me in a healthy and sustaining way. Then I move quickly through the remainder of the steps. Step four is to restore your boundaries by giving the other person full responsibility for their actions and attitudes. In other words, you let them own their stuff. And you can do this in a very physical way. You give them their stuff back, whatever it is that they put on you that you isn't really yours. This is followed by visualizing your healthy personal space, perhaps a bubble of light and positive energy around you. For me, it kind of felt like I had been freed finally from a 150-pound weight that had been around my neck all my life. I did steps five and six together of the process, open to the universe, and those of you who are into the chakras, this will make sense, but open to the universe to get what you really need and then bring light and love into the body, emotions, and mind. In my version of this, this meant asking God and Goddess and anybody out there who would listen from, you know, the spirit world and my soul to help me with this inner cleansing. And you can do it like this with your hands. You can just ask for this to pour down in you. And therapy also and prayer were a huge part of this for me, among other things. Step seven is to send light and unconditional love to the other person and say words of releasing them, which I did. My mother never knew. She wouldn't want to know. She doesn't have to know. Again, forgiveness in the end really is a transformative inner process. Hey, if that other person is open to it and they're not dead, that's another thing. You can forgive those who are dead. But if they're open to it, fine. You know, after a little time after the forgiveness process, you can, you know, reconnect with them. But not everybody's open to it, and it is not a necessary part of it. The inner transformation is really the important thing. And finally, there's step eight. Step eight involves seeing the good in the other person, yourself, or situation. And I did. I was able to be grateful to my mother for having had a job throughout my childhood so that at least our basic needs of food and shelter were met. Over the years, I've been able to add to that list a gratitude for my mother. She was a catalyst, really, for understanding unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, non-judgment, acceptance, letting go. One of my sisters says, we always know what to do. Whatever she would have done, we do the opposite, and it works out pretty good. So very grateful for that. I haven't reconciled with my mother. I know that would be healthy, but I have seen her on occasion since 1994. In 2007, I saw her at the deathbed of the sister who had shared that terrible day with me. My sister and I had long before that found our way back to each other and had become very close friends for the last about 12 or 13 years of her life. My sister had asked me to be part of her transition team in the dying process, and she had also expressed the need to forgive my mother. And so I called up my mother and said, can you come and be by her bedside? And she did. And I saw my mother again last year for her 80th birthday. One of my other sisters is very driven by guilt. She likes to should on herself quite a bit. And she thought that we should mark my mother's 80th birthday by visiting her for a few days in Oregon, but my sister was afraid to be alone with her. So she said, can you come with me? And I said, sure, I'll do anything for my sister. So what was really great is on the bookshelves in my mother's living room were two books that really took me by surprise and really delighted me. One was Being Peace by Thich Nhat Hanh, the fabulous Thich Nhat Hanh. And the other was Loving What Is by Byron Katie. And I said to my mom, wow, great books. And my mom said to me, can you believe two different doctors gave me this bull blank? What nerve. I just started to laugh. I said, well, that's one way of looking at it. You know, and that was the end of that discussion. At the end of those 3 days, I still felt as peaceful and joyous as when I had first come. I was able to see and feel very clearly when in my mother's presence that, on my part at least, forgiving her had provided a space between us for acceptance and letting go, while at the same time, it felt like a miracle to me, dissolved all space between us in a sense on my part of oneness. And I was filled over and over again with compassion for her self-induced misery. I was just like, oh, really? All that remained, whether she loved me or not, was that I loved her completely and unconditionally, and that was enough. This was the freedom that had been born through the process of unconditional forgiveness. No expectations, no preferences, just an acceptance of things as they are in the present moment. A freedom that's really open to all of us if we choose the path of forgiveness. Maybe my husband's right, maybe there's not much glamour in this whole process, but there's an awful lot of peace and joy to be had through releasing resentments large and small and embracing unconditional forgiveness and unconditional love. Thank you.
We have time today for a potent thought. Anyone who would like to share their thoughts with all of us, once again, the greeters will bring you microphones, and please join in a lively discussion, I think.
Diane.
Hi.
I'm a little confused about if you have achieved unconditional forgiveness, must you give the person unconditional love?
Kind of goes hand in hand. My sense is, and this is very hard mathy of me, and if Terry's here, she can maybe help me out on this, but my sense is that positive impact emotions in life really come. The source is love. And so I don't really see any separation between joy and love and happiness and love and peace and love and forgiveness and love. You know? That's how I look at it.
I'm Tom. I'm just sitting here feeling really grateful for my parents today.
Well, see, that's worth it. <right now. laughs>
You didn't say a lot about your father and forgiveness. Is that session two?
Actually, I have forgiven my father. You know, I focused on one thing. There was so much to forgive in my childhood that we could have been here till next Tuesday. And so the same process, though, was involved in forgiving my father as well. I think that's one reason why it took me like 13 years. Because I was forgiven quite a bit at one time. Not only the police for saying this is a domestic issue. That was a biggie. It's like, oh, okay. My counselors at school, who I had tried to tell over and over again what was going on in the home, and they're like, that kind of stuff doesn't happen in Wauwatosa. I mean, you know, there was a lot of stuff in a lot of places where a lot of children have a safety net that wasn't available in the 70s and early 80s.
Alger, I'm thinking about whether it's natural as a kid to learn forgiveness and how, I'm trying to think back. And so as a little person, you you don't have the baggage that we're carrying with us now. And so you learn that, I'm sorry, I forgive you. And it's real to you, I think. When do you learn I don't forgive?
Excuse me?
When do you learn to not forgive? Does that happen young? Does it happen old? Is it circumstantial in your history? And with that said, is it crisis that only brings you to the point of wanting to dig in and find a solution?
There's a lot of reasons why people want to forgive, but often it's because they just know that there's something more that they're not accessing. It doesn't have to be through crisis, but you might be going through life. And I have a lot of clients say this, I know there's something more, but I just can't get it. I want to have sustained peace and happiness, and I don't know how to get there. So that's one reason why, even if there's no real big issues. But what you bring let's go back to what I said earlier. One of the things that happens is when we come from a challenging childhood, and we are not allowed to have a voice, a lot of that stored fear and anxiety and depression or whatever, it gets stored in the body and there's no flow to it, okay? And so you might want to forgive, but all of that uncomfortable feeling, our bodies are these wonderful, our body mind spirit connection is so fabulous, but our bodies are these wonderful, wonderful things that at every point of life they're telling us, you know, pay attention, that pain in your neck is something that's not being looked at, that pain in the gut is something not being looked at, that tightness in the chest, that, you know, constant headache is something that's not being looked at. If you come from a very challenging childhood, you've got a lot of accumulated stuck energy that has not been allowed to flow through the body. And so one of the things that really is necessary, and this is why I needed the help of a therapist, is to really, it's kind of like taking an onion and peeling back the layers. You have to, little bit by bit, you can't do it all at once, but bit by bit, you kind of reveal that authentic you through the process. And then the closer you get to the light that is you, because you let out some of this darkness in you, which is what clogged energy is. I mean, it's stagnant. You know, there's no light in it. And so the more you do that, the closer then you get to seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, seeing the light in you, and the easier it becomes then to. And that's why we need to do the prep work. You know, some prep work is involved. But that's a great question.
Hi. I'm Becky. I just wanted to say thank you so much for sharing your story. I think it made the different steps to forgiveness very real, mm-hmm. and I would imagine that was not, for me, and I'm sure other people in this room, it would be hard for us to get up and share a story that personal for ourselves, and I just want to thank you for doing that. It was great.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Leslie. Can you address the role of anger and maybe being positive and making change, like when you talked about how the police kind of look the other way and mm-hmm. we want to change that systemically?
Well, anger can propel us into motion, propel us forward. And so in that sense, it's a useful tool. We just don't want it to get stuck in the body and not be allowed to flow eventually, you know. And so for those of you who are into heart math, which again, Terry could talk to you about this more. Heart math is the greatest thing since forgiveness. But it really is important to let that energy of anger flow in some way. But the information we get from anger, this is one of the things I tell my clients, is all emotions, no emotions are good or bad. They're all information that are telling us something we need to know. They inform us, and they inform the mind and the rest of the body. That said, some emotions are more beneficial to our physiology, to our body, mind, spirit connection. So anger is one of those that goes heads up, something's going on, you need to deal with it, and then it's important to find a way to transform that anger into peace or something that serves you much better. Does that make sense?
Hi,
My name's Tracy. And so when I hear you forgive the big things, I find that amazing. But there are these little things, and I'll just say, for example, I thought I was being bullied at work. And I used all the tactics that I teach my students, like ignore, tell a grown up. And none of that worked, by the way. So that was interesting. So I let go of all expectations of this person to treat me respectfully. And then I forgave her and I accepted my role in the conflict, which is, there's always that. So boy, was I thrilled when she changed schools.
That's what we do.
So I really started thinking of her a little more fondly, you know, and that maybe just professionally we could never talk. But I saw her in the grocery store and I really ran the other way. So, you know, part of me says, there are people that I can forgive, but I don't necessarily want to expose myself to them, and yet I do want to take credit. And I know my sister has that with my mother. She kind of wants to take credit for forgiving her, but that doesn't mean she wants to open herself up to her. Not that she was as crazy as your mom, but... So I wonder, is there still a legitimate, honorable position there that you, in your heart, you really do say you've forgiven, although maybe you know just a little bit you didn't because you're not willing to expose yourself over and over again to mistreatment, not the level of your mistreatment, but even just other things that are just negative energy coming at you that make you feel bad.
That's so interesting. You know, the fear piece says that there's just unfinished business, you know. Because, I mean, I can stand and I can be with, think about how challenging it probably was to be with my mother for over a week at my sister's deathbed. And she was her usual self. It was really kind of fascinating. One of the things you're really saying, though, is that there is some energy around this issue that hasn't been transformed. And that's what's really great about the 8 steps, is that you transform the energy. And it's really, for instance, one of the men in my group up at the Forgiveness Institute was telling this story about how he had a lot of built-up resentments towards his wife. And he was like, you know, okay, I'll do this whole forgiveness thing for her, but, you know, I just don't see if it's going to do any good or whatever. And he said, he came back the next month because we met once a month for a long weekend. And he said it was really interesting, and this is described fully in the book, by the way, Unconditional Forgiveness. It's a fabulous little book. An easy read for forgiveness, if you can believe it. But he talked about how forgiving on his part, and this is what happened between me and my mother, she was not nearly as vicious as she was prior to my forgiving her and not running away from her. But I had changed by forgiving her. I had changed the energy field around us. And again, this is very hard math. But the latest science says that we are all like radio towers, each and every one of us. And we're putting out our emotions and our thoughts, and we're kind of dropping them in our energetic field, okay? And our energetic fields overlap with other people's energetic fields. And when you're in a family, boy, do they overlap, okay? So what happens, though, when you drop forgiveness into your own field, and you do it through an 8-step transformative process that's out of here and totally flows through the body, okay, and you get it out, you change your electromagnetic field. And so, you know, that other person, there's no need for fear. You're just not affected by their stuff. You've given their stuff back to them. Okay? Does that make sense? Does that make sense to people? Again, you could ask Terry about this. It's really fabulous stuff, this whole energetic field. And that's one reason why when we are near people who we've got unfinished business with, we almost vibrate with like, oh, I don't want to be near them. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. Oh my gosh. Because we haven't cleared our field of energy. When you clear the field of energy, love is, in a sense, the thing that's being dropped in there then. And it's a clear path. Yeah.
Hi. If you just switch the child molestation with violent beatings, including swift kicks to the head, it's my life, you know. It's nice to hear that you've come as far as you have. I and work at it in counseling more than not over the last 20 years in trying to make my life better. But the one sticking point, and I just can't get past it, is the woman who ran a red light and turned my daughter into a quadriplegic. If I could hurt her bad, I would. And that's not a good feeling. And it's just, when I watch my daughter suffer every day, it's hard to let that go. And it's really hard to hold on to it. And what do you do when it's that bad? It's your child. What do you do there? I really need to know.
You do the process. I know that sounds simplistic, but what, I mean, you, I want you to just take a moment to note how you feel in your body. I mean, because I can see you're in distress now just talking about it. But a lot of that distress is pent-up anger and rage and all sorts of other stuff. And to ask yourself, how is that serving you? Right. And so, right, it needs to flow out, because in order to be the best you, the best, the soul you that you want to put out there, that authentic self, it's got to flow out. And when you are expressing your most authentic self, you might see things now that you're not capable of seeing in this moment right now. You might see things down the road that you're like, I did not know that there was this light in this, that when I'm looking at this through the eyes of my soul, that there was this in that. And it sounds really harsh, but it's already happened. So you are chained right now, and your daughter, to the past. And so there is, you've lost the present moment, and who knows what gifts are here now in the present moment for you. Does that make sense? It's not... Yeah, it does here. And that's the thing, you know. We often store things up here so that we can make sense of them. I'll tell you a not-so-funny story, but like a couple months ago, my brother called me, and he lives overseas. He kind of ran all the way to Israel and converted to Judaism and all sorts of other things to not deal with our childhood, okay? And he said to me, and he's going through a period of depression. He's now in his mid-50s, and he said, you know, what I think was going on in our childhood, I think our mother loved us so much that she needed us to be perfect because she was perfect too. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know? But this is what he is trying to come up with to run away from that sense of disconnect, you know, that internal pain that he doesn't know how to deal with, okay? So we end up telling ourselves all sorts of interesting stories to deal with our traumas in life and our pain and our disappointment. But like when we forgive, it gives us a clearer picture. And I can say, yeah, this wasn't, my brother's not capable of this right now, but this is, you know, this was pretty terrible. But I forgive because I want joy in my life, and I have it. Anybody, I can't contain myself half the time. I'm very peaceful and very joyous, but a lot of it was that forgiveness piece, truly.
Well, I hope you'll forgive me, but I think we could continue this after the service.
Thank you.
We'll now have our food pantry collection. Please remember that the monthly food collection is for the food pantry of Waukesha. These cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LUC with the amounts for food pantry and for LUC noted on the memo line. If you bought food contributions, please place them in the baskets.
Thank you.
If you'll remain in your seats, but please join me in an affirmation. It's number 637, a litany of atonement. For remaining silent when a single voice could have made a difference, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, we forgive ourselves and each other. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone,
we forgive ourselves and each other.
We begin again in love. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For losing sight of our unity, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness. We forget ourselves and each other and begin again. Please rise as you're willing and able to join in our closing hymn number 311, Let It Be a Dance. We're going to sing verses 1 and 3.
Thank you.
one more last word. We will be posting some information about the 9-month self-mastery program with Mary Hayes Grieco, that Elizabeth also is the assistant director of. And so please look for this information about planning dates starting in October 2012.